If you enjoy listening to music on your computer, whether it be streamed over the internet or played from your hard drive, chances are you will have heard of Vorbis. It's being talked about more and more. Someone who's been following the Vorbis scene for a couple of years now is Jeff Shang from Brisbane, Australia. Jeff, welcome to Main Menu. Vorbis, let's start at the beginning and find out what is Vorbis that everybody's talking about.
Okay, well, Vorbis is Vorbis is what's called an audio compression codec. Now, that's a fairly technical term, but most people would be familiar with other audio compression schemes such as MP3, which is what you're listening to now, of course, and, of course, other things like Real Audio and Windows Media Audio and a few other ones that are doing the rounds. What sets Vorbis apart, though, is that Vorbis has been developed under what's called the open source model of development, which means that people are writing the software, sharing the software, making the software available for anyone to look at, make suggestions on, make improvements to, and in Vorbis' case, actually making the software available for people to use freely in their programs, provided they, you know, credit the original authors, you know, basically say this is their software and we're using it, thank you very much.
Of course, there's that wonderful proverb about many hands make light work and all that sort of thing, but isn't there a danger that if lots of people are working on this and the source code's available and it's freely modifiable, that there may be difficulty in maintaining basic standards so that, let's say, the Vorbis plugin for Winamp will play all types of Vorbis files?
Yeah, well, at the moment, that's not proven to be too much of a problem, and there's one really good reason for that, I suppose, is that one person is mainly doing most of the work. Unfortunately, the guys that are doing it are concerned about writing the software and getting it finished, that getting the standard documented has unfortunately taken a bit of a back seat, and that's just simply because of, you know, there's not enough people to do the work that know enough about it. But generally, the code that most people are using actually comes from the official Vorbis software distribution. So while people can write their own implementations, most people are actually using the reference implementation, which is the one that the libVorbis that the Vorbis developers are actually writing.
Where does the name Vorbis come from?
Vorbis is actually a character from a Terry Pratchett novel called Small Gods. I actually haven't read that particular book, so I can't tell you much about Vorbis, the character. And people either tend to like Terry Pratchett or hate him. I actually think he's fantastic, but I haven't read that particular book. But that's where that's come from. And it is one of the things that people wonder about, you know, the name. It's a rather odd name, and certainly, rather sort of more creative, I suppose, in some ways than something like MPEG, Layer 3, or, you know, Real Audio or Windows Media Audio.
And, of course, then you hear about this Og Vorbis. That's what everybody really refers to it as, Og Vorbis. I mean, Og, what is that, and where does it come from?
Well, Og, actually, it's quite strangely, actually, there's another Terry Pratchett character called Nanny Og, but that's not actually where the Og comes from. The word Og is actually taken from, I believe it's taken from a strategic move in a rather nerdy game that people play called NetHack. But Og itself is, Vorbis is one of a number of proposed multimedia codecs, open multimedia codecs, which will be, you know, royalty free and patent free. And I'll get onto this issue of patent in a sec, because that's the whole point of developing Vorbis. But, you know, they've got things like speech compression in mind, video, and, you know, other things, you know, metadata formats, the whole thing. And that all comes under the Og project. Now, in a technical sense, what Og is it's kind of like the framework, it's the foundation, it's the container in which these other formats are put in. So if you have a Vorbis file, an Og Vorbis file, it is in fact a file with an Og bitstream layer in it that contains Vorbis data. And in the future, when they've developed more codecs, you may, for example, find that an OGG file contains Vorbis file, you know, Vorbis data for the audio, another format with video pictures, maybe another format with metadata information about exactly what it is you're listening to or watching. You might have another stream with subtitles and so on. So that's what OGG is.
And the bottom line of all of this, I mean, why people should be excited about it, is that it just sounds so good.
It does sound very good. Just before we go on to the issue of sound, I'll come back to this issue of patents. A lot of people may think, it's fairly obvious to most people that Windows Media Audio and Real Audio, proprietary products of, you know, Microsoft and Real Networks, respectively. But most people might think that MP3 is completely open and free. Well, it's not. It has patents on it, and patents are held by the Fraunhofer Institute and Thomson Multimedia. And a few years ago, those companies started making noises about charging for use of MP3. And in fact, in some circles, they do charge, and relatively charge quite a bit. people who make software, particularly things like games and so on, have to pay a fee for every particular copy of that game that's sold, and that can, you know, that contributes to the price of those things, and pushes them up, and it's a considerable factor when you're writing games. There's also, you know, programs that encode MP3 and decode have to pay royalties to these companies, and also there's been noises about about charging people to actually stream using it and having a minimum annual fee or a percentage of revenue. That
sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Yeah.
And so this was a big concern back about 4 years ago, and it's still a concern now, but particularly while the details weren't available, this was a big concern to those who, you know, do this stuff for a hobby. And also those who are just not into the whole commercial thing. So they began development on Vorbis. And now this is what we have. We have a audio standard which has no patents, which has no royalties. And once the standard is properly written up and documented and released to the public domain, you know, it's perfectly legal for you to sit down with your computer, use the standard information to write an encoder and decoder and sell it or whatever you want to do with it, and you won't owe the Vorbis people a cent.
Okay.
Now, you were talking about the audio quality. Mm. I'll get back to that now. The audio quality is really quite impressive, particularly at 44,100 cycles per second, samples per second, which is what CDs use. The reason why it's particularly good at that rate and not at others is because Vorbis hasn't been tuned, they call it. They haven't looked specifically at lower rates and specifically tuned the encoder to encode them optimally. Now, that's being done at the moment as we speak. The most recent release of the Vorbis is the 1.0 RC3, which came out on New Year's Eve. RC4 will be the next release, and that will have tuned modes for all sampling rates, so that will be really quite impressive, and we'll really be able to see how low it can go for things like, you know, streaming audio on the net and so on. That will be very exciting. But the quality of audio that Vorbis provides, particularly at, you know, CD quality audio, really is quite impressive. The default quality mode, and I'll talk about this in a minute if you let me, is quality mode 3, which tends to encode music, CD quality music, at around about 110 kbps for those who are familiar with, you know, MP3 terminology. In my opinion, this particular mode compares very favourably with MP3 at around 160 kbps, sometimes, you know, maybe even 192. So you have you know, if you are using a 1.0 RC3 encoder, which most of them would be that are doing the rounds, you will by default get a file that sounds better than MP3 defaults tend to do, and as well as being smaller.
All right.
Of course, you can control the kind of bit rate that you encode to, and if you go higher, of course, it will sound even better. Though, of course, most of us mortals may not be able to hear it. And of course, you can go lower, but you can go as low as around 64 kbps for 44.1 kilohertz stereo, which is quite impressive. I've never seen MP3 go any lower than about 96.
Now, the quality modes, is zero poorer quality than three?
Yes, the quality modes range from 0.0 to 10.0, and you can run to several decimal places. This is a thing that they've brought in RC3, and it's a little bit odd for people because we're used to having, say, your MP3 decoder, they'll only let you encode at, you know, 64, 80, 96, 112, 128, and so on, you know, specific modes. Well, this is what they've done here, except that the modes are a sliding scale. 0.0 is the lowest bit rate, and 10.0 is something ridiculously high, something like 500 kbps for a CD sample. Now, the reason why they've gone with this quality thing is that Vorbis is what's known as a VBR codec. It's a variable bitrate codec. This means that it can use fewer bytes, you know, less data to or disk space to encode something that's relatively simple to encode, and it can use more bytes to encode something that's more complicated. And when it's done properly, you shouldn't be able to tell by listening to it. And with Vorbis, you can't really tell by listening to it exactly how much data has been used to encode what. So it means that you can end up with a file that might average, you know, say 100 kbps, and simple sounds might only use about 80 or 70 kbps to encode, and more complicated sounds might use 130 or 140. But it generally keeps the file size down to a reasonable size. Now, the reason why they've used these quality modes, it means that you have some way of comparing files. It means that if you have something that's easy to encode and something that's difficult to encode, regardless of the file sizes that you get, if you encode them at the same quality setting, let's say quality 3, which is the default, they should sound, you know, comparable. The quality that you get, the sound quality that you get in the resulting file should be comparable. And this also means that once they get all the other modes and things worked out, I mean, say, at the moment you could do a 44.1 mono file, and if you do that at quality 3, it should be comparable sound quality to a 44.1 stereo file at quality 3 as well. And of course, when you get these other lower rates sorted out, that should also apply for those as well. So it's a bit of a different mindset for those who are used to numbers. But this is the kind of thing that they're wanting people to go with, because it means something more than just a number.
Although for those of us who are either conscious of streaming or how much disk space, I mean, if you encode a 128 kbps MP3 file, you know exactly how much disk space on your hard disk that's going to take up, and for some, you know, some people care about that. In fact, I'm surprised that, you know, a lot of the open source sort of Linux heads who like to know these things, you know, don't seem to be upset about losing that knowledge.
Well, there is a lot of discussion, and the encoder does tell you how much space it's taken up once you're done. What they said is, They've listed nominally what the bit rates ranges should be, with an understanding that the file that you get could be could average a couple of kbps either side of the figure. So 0 is 64, 1 is 80, 2 is 96, 3 is 112, 4 is 128, and so on. So you do have a rough idea how much it's going to take up, but often I've found that the file that you get with sort of typical music material will generally tend to be a little less. So using quality 3, which is nominally 112, the files that I've encoded generally tend to come out at about 108, 109.
So if you were starting a new music collection and you were ripping your CDs, and lots of rippers support them now, CDEX, Easy CDDA Extractor, which is my favourite ripper, supports it and has done for a while, then you are likely to get much better sound and much smaller file sizes with Vorbis.
Yeah, I mean, the promotional line that the Vorbis guys are taking is that you'll get better sound for the same size or smaller files for the same sound. But it's my belief that if you're typically using 128 kbps MP3 or maybe even 160, then it's possible for you to actually get both, to get smaller files and better sound, if you know, if you're in around about that quality 3 type setting, which is why that's why they've gone for the for that as the default. Most MP3 encoders use 128 kbps as the default, which I personally think sounds a bit ordinary. So if you use the default setting for Vorbis, the Vorbis encoder, which is quality 3, you should get both.
Once you download Winamp 2.8 or higher, you've got Vorbis right there, because it's output plugin is supported, input plugin rather, the input Vorbis plugin is there, and there are other Vorbis plugins for various other players floating around. Vorbis.com is an interesting site. They're always adding things and demonstrating that support is increasing, and it's fascinating to note that the Sonic Foundry people adopted Vorbis very early. It's been there since SoundForge version 5, so if you have SoundForge 5, you can create Vorbis files.
Yes, you can. It's important just to state something important here. The decoder, the Vorbis decoder, is already locked in. It's finished for 1.0. So anything that you have that has a Vorbis decoder RC2 or higher will be able to play any Vorbis 1.0 file. Now, the encoder is still being worked on. So, for example, if you've got SoundForge 5.0, it's quite likely that you've only got 1.0 Beta 4 or maybe even something older than that in the encoder. I'm not sure what Sonic Foundry is doing about allowing you to upgrade the encoder. Maybe you have to upgrade SoundForge, I don't know. But so that is still a bit of an area of change. But certainly once you've got something that will allow you to play Vorbis files, provided it's, you know, it's come out in the last 6 months or so, you shouldn't have to upgrade again. But yeah, there are a lot of people adopting it, partly I think because of the fact that it doesn't cost them anything, you know, and that it is technically superior, is something that works in Vorbis' favour. And I think what we'll see is that Vorbis will start appearing in lots of software that people are using. This is a neat thing about it. Vorbis will start appearing, well, is appearing, and will continue to appear in software that people already use. And then it'll just be like an added feature, and people go, oh, well, what's this? Let's have a look at this. And it will mean that people who have adopted Ogg Vorbis and, you know, want to give a file to someone and say, well, okay, I'm going to send you this file. It's an Ogg Vorbis file, but the software you've got there can play it already. You know, it's not going to be a big deal. People won't have to go down and download and learn new software just to be able to use the format, which I think is a good thing.
Getting it in hardware is going to be tougher, though, isn't it? Making sure that DVD players play it as well as MP3 CDs, and that you can transfer a Vorbis to your Rio or whatever the portable MP3 player that you're using. That must be a bit tougher because it's hardware, more difficult to upgrade.
Yeah, there's a couple of different things going on. There's a few technical issues here, which I'll briefly gloss over for those who are interested. Probably just about everyone who's listening to this program will be listening on a PC, whether that be running Windows or Linux or whatever else. And, of course, a PC or even a Mac, they both have processors in them that do what's called floating point mathematics very well. You know, there was a bit of noise recently, you know, a few years ago about an Intel floating point bug, but still, they do floating point mathematics really well. Floating point mathematics is where you've got numbers with, you know, many decimal places, and the processors can cope with that sort of arithmetic quite well. But there are other processors out there, particularly in portable devices and standalone devices. Processors that don't do floating point mathematics very well, in fact, might not even do floating point at all, they have ways of emulating floating point, but it's quite slow. And of course, in dealing with audio, decoding or encoding audio, it's, speed is important, particularly in decoding. You don't want gaps in your audio. So there's been this problem of trying to convert across the libraries which are written to use floating point mathematics so that they can do the same thing under integer-based mathematics. Now, the guys who wrote who are writing the Vorbis stuff have actually released for, on a commercial basis, a library, an integer-based Vorbis library. This has caused a bit of controversy, but it's fairly well understood that one of the reasons why they're doing this is to try and make some money to fund ongoing Vorbis development, because, of course, you know, money is a fair issue in open source development. And so that is available now. So it means that up until 6 months ago, there really wasn't much at all available for Vorbis in hardware, because the software the software that goes in the hardware to play this really couldn't be written very easily without, you know, putting in a lot of work. And in fact, a couple of people did try and got fairly ordinary results. But now that this fully compliant library is available on a commercial basis for manufacturers to buy, it's like, here it is, it works because we wrote it. You know, we wrote the format, so we know it works. Come and buy it off us. And they're prepared to negotiate a bit, you know, on price too. If people are just small outfit and so on, they'll, you know, look at the price. I actually don't know how much it costs, but anyway, so that's available, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it starting to appear in appliances fairly soon now that that can be done, because, you know, as you've pointed out, the sound format is superior, and also particularly with portable devices where you've got fixed amount of storage, Vorbis files will take up less space for the same sound quality. So there's a lot of people very keen to actually use devices with audio, you know, Vorbis, you know, audio support, and there's been a bit of lobbying going on trying to get people like Creative with their Rio or whatever, all those sorts of people to support it. So now that this library is available, I wouldn't be surprised to see it starting to appear and appear rather quickly.
Now, we also hear about MP4 being the future of audio. I mean, have you been able to hear any comparisons of those two?
Well, I understand. Well, let's get this one thing clear. I think, as far as I'm aware, MP4 as such doesn't exist. MPEG-4, which is not the same thing. I understand that Windows Media is an implementation of MPEG-4. But MPEG-4 is more encumbered by royalties and patents and licensing fees than MP3 is. And there's some complication to understand it, and I could be wrong on this, but I heard someone say something along the lines of, basically, there's something in the terms which basically says that if you implement it, you can't make it compatible with anyone else's, which would seem rather counterintuitive to me. There are a couple of things which are based on MPEG-4 out there. There's a thing called AAC and there's a thing called TwinVQ.
That's right.
Both very good, I understand, but there are these issues to do with licensing and royalties and they, you know, some of those things have been around for a few years now and they haven't really taken off.
I'm really interested that the whole VQF format hasn't taken off, because to me that's awesome. It takes a heck of a long time to encode anything with it, though.
Yeah, well, I actually haven't heard anything in that format, but that could well be one of the reasons, is all this licensing stuff. You know, people have to jump through hoops so that they can actually use it, particularly, you know, probably in the encoding side, whereas, you know, Vorbis is free and it's open and it's out there, and, you know, the code... You know, the Vorbis people have released their code in a way that says, here it is, just tell everyone that we wrote this and you can use it in your software. You know, people can put it in without really doing too much work at all.
So what about the question of digital rights management? Is that being addressed?
Well, I mentioned before that OGG is a container format which can contain different types of data. Now, in theory, that could also contain digital rights management data. Now, the Vorbis folks are quite unsurprisingly not interested in digital rights management. It it's really not what they're about. And, you know, I personally can't blame them for that. But there's certainly nothing to stop anyone from putting in other data into the same OGG stream as the Vorbis data that controls things like digital rights management, and that's for someone to do if they want to do that.
Yeah, so does that mean that Vorbis files are starting to appear as an alternative on file sharing services and things at this stage?
Well, I haven't particularly noticed, but I wouldn't be surprised if they are. For some systems, it's a bit of an issue. For example, I don't know what it's like under Windows, but I use Audio Galaxy under Linux, and as far as I can see, they only seem to support MP3. Or perhaps WMA as well, I'm not sure. But I've never seen an OGG file on there at all, an OGG Vorbis file at all. And that could be well be an issue with, you know, what they consider audio to be. Another neat thing about Vorbis files is that you have a very flexible tagging system. Most people have probably heard of ID3 tags for MP3, but they're very fixed in their kind of format, whereas Vorbis files have a very flexible tagging system. You can pretty much put any kind of, you know, this tag equals that information type tag into a Vorbis file. So, you know, I could say, for example, title equals main menu, section equals 3, presenter equals Jonathan Mosen, guest equals Jeff Shang, subject equals Vorbis, etc. You know, you can have tags that mean almost anything. And if you had that kind of functionality in a file sharing system where you could search those tags, it would be extremely powerful because, you know, you'd have, in theory at least, a much better idea of what you're getting before you go and get it. You could get, you know, find out what album things came off, what, you know, which particular version of a given song, and it would be less of a lottery. So, I don't know, I haven't seen much of it, but I tend to only use one or two of them, and it's quite possible that they're appearing on other systems, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them become more noticeable on those sorts of systems.
Now, the word is that at some point Shoutcast from Nullsoft will support Vorbis. They appear when we look at Winamp 3 to be changing their architecture to the point that they will be able to support a range of streaming formats. But at the moment, Icecast 2 appears to be where it's at with Vorbis, and people are doing some successful streaming with that.
They are. Icecast 2, the core of Icecast version 2, which is, you know, the bit that does all the work, has been fairly stable now for about a year. And in fact, I've been assisting someone with their server to do some stuff, and it's very solid. It'll, you know, run and run and run and keep going. They're intending, because Icecast version 1 is an MP3 server, and they're looking in Icecast 2 to be able to support MP3 as well, so that, you know, people can use Icecast 2 to serve all sorts of needs. The more sort of complicated user interface type aspect of the Icecast 2 server hasn't yet been written. So, for example, I haven't dealt with things like directory servers and you know, controlling access and all that sort of stuff. That's still to be done, but the core functionality is pretty good too. There's also, for those who are interested in knowing what's around, there's also a server, a Vorbis streaming server that's been written in Java as well. I don't know why you would want to do that, but some people do, obviously, and that apparently works fairly well as well. So it's happening, and certainly, you know, Nullsoft paid a software programmer in Poland to write the Vorbis encoder and decoder plugins for Winamp, so I wouldn't be surprised. They seem to be interested in Vorbis, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Vorbis streaming come to Shoutcast server and to your Winamp fairly soon.
That will be good, because when they tune it for lower bit rates, it means that modem users should be able to get near CD quality stereo.
Well, yeah, certainly the kind of streams that you can hear at 56 kbps now really ought to be able to make it their way down to modem speeds. This, I've got to say, the tuning for lower bit rates is something that I've been waiting for ever since I've been watching it, and I've been watching this stuff for 2 years, and I've really, really been waiting for this, and it's going to come in the next release.
When are you expecting that?
I really don't know. The problem with all of this is that basically most of the development, particularly all the technical encoding stuff, is mainly being done by this one guy, Christopher Montgomery. And basically it's done when it's done. Every time I've seen him put out an estimate of how long it's going to take, it takes longer. So I think he's just given up and said, you know, it'll be ready when it's ready. But it's been... Releases are typically about 6 months apart, and it's now almost 5 months since the last one. So I would be expecting it within the next couple of months, but certainly I'll be testing it as soon as it comes out, because it should be very, very interesting indeed.
It will be. And the BBC is streaming in Vorbis. They've got a sort of a test site buried away there, which comes and goes a bit at support.bbc.co.uk/og/og. There's nice stuff on there. They've got Radio 1 in various qualities, and last I checked, they had BBC Radio 6, their new digital music service, there as well.
Yeah, and they've also had Radio 4 up as well, which has been interesting. I saw a message a couple of weeks ago on their mailing list saying that that they were going to have to shut it down. They're very, very... You know, the BBC is a very professional organisation, and they're very much sticklers for... making sure that they have the rights to do what they're doing. So a couple of times I've seen them have to take streams down for a couple of days after their rights expired, and then put them up again after that's been all sorted. So whether it's gone now for good, I'm not sure. I haven't really checked back to see, but they're very concerned to make sure that they have the right to do what they're doing. They've been doing this now for about 6 months, and the sounds are quite impressive. To be a full beneficiary of it, you kind of really have to be on cable because of the kind of data rates that we're looking at. But the sound is very impressive. And they have been working quite closely with the Vorbis developers. The Vorbis developers have obviously realised that this is going to be something that would give Vorbis a shot in the arm. So they've been working quite cooperatively with them, to the point where they were actually running some RC3 code before it was released. And you know, making life easier for them in that sort of way. So it's been really, really good. And from what I can gather, the Vorbis tests that the BBC have been running have generated quite a deal of support and interest from the internet community. And the BBC recognise this, and they're really happy with how it's going.
Excellent. Well, so resources, if people want to keep up with the whole Vorbis development, can you tell us about places that people should be visiting and checking things out?
Well, the main site for members of the public who are really interested about what's going on, as you mentioned before, is vorbis.com. That's got all the plugins, all the software, and lists of all sorts of interesting bits and pieces. If you're interested in really getting under the hood, there's another site, which is vorbis.org, which redirects to the main website for the developers, and you can see things like, you can download source codes and things like that from there. You can also, from that page, get onto the Vorbis user and Vorbis developers mailing lists. They're always very interesting to watch if you really want to keep up with what's going on. And if you're really, really keen, you can subscribe to a mailing list which sends out lists of all the changes to the source codes as they get committed. I can't actually understand it, but I watch it, and a couple of times recently I've seen some very big lists of changes going. So development is definitely marching forward, and it's quite exciting to see that happen.
So the starting point would be Vorbis, that's VORBIS.com.
That's correct.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, and we'll look forward to watching developments, because I think this is the future of audio, at least for the moment. You can never tell in this game, but I think it's got a very bright future.
No worries. Thank you, Jonathan.
That's Jeff Shang. And don't forget that if you are interested in discussing audio on the PC, I've been running a PC audio list for blind people for over 4 years now. It has around 600 or more participants these days, so there are lots of people who can help you with questions, and it's a good place to discuss anything, whether it be listening to audio on the net or creating audio on your hard drive, MIDI, whatever it is. You're welcome to join. If you're interested in any of those subjects, the address to subscribe is pc-audio-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's pc-audio-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
It's time for us to log off for another week. On behalf of all of the Main Menu team, I'm Jonathan Mose, inviting you to join us again for another Main Menu.